Welcome to another episode of The Meta. I am your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week is a very special guest, one James Morehouse. Hello, James.
Hi mate. Is everyone a special guest or just me?
I feel you
say that more often.
You will always have a very special place in my heart, James.
Oh, mate. Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Pleasure.
I appreciate it. Thank you. So, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for those who might not know you?
Sure. My name is James Morehouse. I live in Canberra, Australia, where we recently had CanCon. I predominantly play Circle and dabble in a few other bits and pieces like Grimkin. Most notably, I won Lock and Load 2014, which is now totally irrelevant. I've been to the WTC a few times for Australia, and I'm going back this year to Poland.
So, which year was it that you became a meme with the WTC?
Oh, that was 2015. Yeah, in 15. Ireland.
Okay.
Where I said, just about to win a WTC as like a bit of a joke, and it wasn't really a joke. Actually, it wasn't really a joke at all, was it?
No, it wasn't.
But I did a next level meta move on CanCon. So, spoiler alert, I won CanCon on the weekend just gone, which is Australia's biggest con. And I said to Chris before the final game, I said, Chris, I'm going to take a selfie with you, and I'm going to say, just about to lose a CanCon Masters final. And if I, like, according to tradition, that means I'll win. And if I lose, then I did what I said I'd do. So, ta-da, foolproof.
All right. Well, real quick, I'll go through the format of what we'll do. We are going to chat with each other for about 45 or 15 minutes in this main episode, and then we will have a bonus episode where we continue the discussion for people who back the podcast on Patreon. So we don't have as many questions from our Patreon listeners this time because we kind of threw out this, we're not doing this when we normally expect to this record. And so didn't have as much time to get questions, but we do have a few that we can go through.
I threw a spanner in the works and said, Jay, let's do it now.
And I said, anything for you.
Ah, sounds good.
Okay. So James Raymond said, even though Kruger 2 got buffed in Mark 3, why doesn't every Circle player play him?
I think every Circle player does play him. He is the most popular Circle caster. He is S tier. And I think the only times you don't see him is when he's probably maybe a bit too complex or I'd say he has a very high skill ceiling. And so especially newer players might shy away from him. I remember when I started playing Circle, I don't think I touched him for about 10 to 12 months. But I think I actually just disagree. I think he's the most popular Circle caster at the moment.
There's a few follow-ups where someone says, because he wasn't buffed, James, and then
he was straight buffed. He was straight up buffed. Let me just touch on that for a second. So his stats are identical from memory. He gained Sheltering Hand, so friendly faction models within his command range of 9 gain immunity electricity, which is unbelievable given the amount of electric attacks and things that can accidentally hurt his own army. But also, he can use his own models as homing beacons for things like Lightning Storm. He gained Rebuke, which is unbelievable. The only downside to Rebuke is that it can't be geomancied because it's an upkeep. Windstorm remains as powerful as ever. The only real nerf is that his feet -2 speed. Well, models can still charge through speed debuffs. That's really about it. He's unbelievable. He remains unbelievable.
Okay, his next question is, is the Storm Raptor broken?
Ooh, good and topical question. So just a little bit of context. One of my lists on the weekend, I played Kruger 2 in Bones with 4 heavies and Hermit. But then the list I played 5 out of 6 games was Una 2 with 2 Storm Raptors. So I think that might be why he's asking. Do I think the Storm Raptor is broken? I think it's incredibly good for its points. I don't... Oh, I'm leaning towards... Probably the only thing that stops me is that in the 4th round I played against Crucible Guard and I got hit with the Withering Humor from a Dragon's Breath rocket on the Storm Raptor. And I was like, wow, this is now 12-16, like a light. It's like a light with 50 health. So I think played well, it can be pretty untouchable, and therefore its defensive stats don't matter, which is its weakness. So if it, you know, if it was 12-19, I'd probably say yes. If it was 12-20, I'd say yes. Is that a good answer?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long and storied tradition of people coming on the meta and saying that their models are strong but not broken. So we'd hate to break that.
Yeah, we would hate to do that. The one thing I will say is that it does, like, I love the model, and I looked at its rules, I was just thinking about it so much in terms of, like, this Mulcher's infantry, it presents a really strong assassination, and it's like a pseudo 17-inch gun, really good gun. There's nothing bad about this. So, yeah, I'd almost say yes, given its defensive stats.
His final question is Una 2 great again?
So, Hand of Fate, dice fixing is a hell of a drug. When I stopped playing in 2016, Circle had no dice fixing. There was no Puppet Master in the faction. There was no Hand of Fate. There was no nothing. I now am running a list with double Hand of Fate that cycles across, 68 points of your list, plus Puppet Master from the Spirit Cauldron, plus Mega Puppet Master from the objective. Una 2's dice fixing is the ultimate turd polishing, and I started off Mark 3 looking at her going, oh my god, this is boring, and then got back to it and was like, this is absolutely incredible. So, Una 2, great again. Nothing special about this list, just solid dice fixing.
Okay.
I think she really plays a lot of different lists really well. I think she's sort of in that B tier category where she can provide a bit of an off meta answer to things. She might answer something specific. She can be a little bit of a dark horse, but she's not really a tricky caster or anything. The only real her lights are pretty cool if you want to run a list with, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 lights, but the only real tricky thing to her that I got away with on the weekend was she has a Thunderbolt gun, which actually won me the final. So that's my hot take on Una 2. Nothing out of the ordinary.
Okay.
To give you an idea, I didn't feat with her, period. I lie. I feated in the last game on the bottom of turn 1 to get an extra 2 inches to have a few, like, to get some shots into some solos. Otherwise, I did not feat across the weekend. Her feat wasn't that useful. If you're not feating every game, you're probably, like, not maximizing a model's potential, and therefore I don't think Una's sort of up in that S tier.
Okay. So, next set of questions is from IR Jake, and he says, how does it feel to have won the biggest event in Australia?
Feels good. Next question. I last happened to win CanCon in 2012, so it's been 8 years, and I've had some close shaves since then, that game with Bradigus against Billy Cruikshanks back in 16, maybe 15. So winning it, coming back and winning is, I guess, special to me. It's also Australia's largest con, which is nice, but the game has gone through a revolution between now and then. So it kind of feels like just coming full circle. I wasn't expecting to win at all. My expectations have been low for myself, but it's nice to know that I can come back and, you know, after a couple of games, still flex the Kruger 2 rote muscles and try some new things. So yeah, overall, it's a warm, fuzzy feeling.
So his next statement's last question is, he says, I know you took a break from the game for a while, so the feeling must be surreal. What was your preparation like? Did you go in hoping to do well or to have fun and play some games with people you haven't seen for a while?
So, good question. I went in hoping to have a lot of fun, and I definitely did, but I also have fun when I win. So, I'm competitive by nature, so that was very sort of natural for me to enjoy, to have fun because I'm winning. However, I think I've got a very different mindset these days. I was ready to, like, there were some games where I was like, look, I'll go for this assassination. I think it's pretty good odds. if it doesn't happen, that's fine. I've learned a few things and I've grown as a player. The other thing was all 15 of the Australian-ish like WTC players in contention were there. So the quality of the field was really high. So again, I wasn't putting pressure on myself, but I thought, look, I could easily have like an absolute shark pit of a field to get through. What was the other part of that question?
It was basically asking what sort of preparation you did for...
Yeah. So I found I only played one or two games with Kruger in the lead-up, which was a bit strange because his list has actually changed a lot, and the Bones list that I landed on came through a bit of practice. I only played in one game, but it was a fucking awesome game. I'll come to that later if you want, but I played one turn. And as a result, I fell in love with the Storm Raptor, and I was like, I want to play the shit out of this model. So I ended up playing it a ton in practice and talking to our potential WTC team about it and going, this is really good. Like, this is super strong. I don't care if it doesn't do well or it does, because I really want to test this model in a pressure cooker environment. So yeah, my owner to prep, didn't get too many games, maybe half a dozen on Vassal. And it translated really well to the table. I think what was exciting about it was everyone looked at it and was just like, wow, this is a bit different. And I found out recently it's very similar, I think there was a Danish WTC list with two Storm Raptors. But I think this list is just really well rounded to Kruger, and people see Kruger as a bit of a boogeyman, but then they're like, oh my God, I can't drop this into Uno. And it took a lot of people by surprise as well. So, I mean, to go back to that earlier question as well, the fact that it was dark horsing a little bit and people were looking at two Storm Raptors going like WTF, indicates Uno's not really, common at the moment. But B, that you can sort of be creative in list development and come up with your own fruitions and catch people a little bit off guard. And I think, you know, the combination of playing a shitload, off meta, it all came together very, very fortunate. And a bit of luck, it all came together very fortunate for me. So, yeah.
All right. So we have another question for you. This is from the same person. I am Jake.
What? I wonder who he is. Do you reckon he's Jake?
He might be. Mm. Yeah. He says, side note, huge congrats, and I'm a huge fan of the podcast you did with Ben and Trent back in the day. I'm glad you and Megalith were able to compromise and be best pals again. Inspiring stuff.
Thank you. We got him the cast to kill in the fifth game, just for what it's worth. I said, Megalith, it is time to lift your game, and he got it.
Why don't you go ahead and you had mentioned before we started that you guys had a little bit of a reunion at CanCon, so could you maybe share a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So CanCon is Across Australia Day long weekend in Australia, and I'm very lucky because I live in the town where CanCon is, Canberra, but everyone makes an effort to get down to Canberra for CanCon and then in the middle of the year for WinterCon. So the guys, Trent and Ben, and then also the great man Aaron Whale, and my former teammate from the infamous 2015 year, Aaron Thompson, who's now playing 40K, they all come over and stay at my place. So we have our tiny little two-bedroom apartment and six big nerds staying there. So I'm sure Hugh, my girlfriend, absolutely loves that. And we make it a tradition each year. So the guys get in on Thursday, Friday we hang out, set up the painting room, because Trent now runs the Crystal Dragon at CanCon. We did an escape room that night and went out to dinner, and the Australian Open's on telly, so we watched that and played a shitload of board games, highly enjoyable, but also recommend. We played Blood Rage and Nemesis, which is basically Alien, the board game, and two of the greatest board games of recent times that I've played. And then the Saturday, Sunday, Monday is the con, so the public holiday is Monday. And we all sort of actually just do our own thing now. So Trent runs the painting comp. Whaley and I were playing War Machine. Benny was just watching, walking around, enjoying a bit of everything. There was a 220-player Age of Sigmar tournament, 180-player 40K tournament. So just lapping it up. And Aaron played in the 40K tournament. That one goes for 8 rounds over 3 days, so it's a bit of a grinder as well.
So, but it really is just a chance for the guys to get together. We come back each night, eat, watch tennis, play board games until 1 o'clock, get up at 7, get way too little sleep, and do it all again. So it's...
You're not a young man anymore, James.
Sorry?
I said you're not a young man anymore.
At least
Trent isn't.
I was secretly glad I qualified for the top four masters because that meant I got to sleep in on Sunday. I can't. The other guys were just shattered by the time they got to Monday night. So, but yeah, it really is just a good chance for a reunion for everyone. And look, if Benny and Trent ever come back, we'll get the podcast going, but not anytime soon.
All right. Well, next set of questions.
Thanks. I am probably Jake for that.
You're welcome, James. So James Raymond says, another question. Do you feel your recent fitness success has affected your gaming?
I would say it has done the opposite. I would say that it has detracted purely, not to do with endurance or anything, though that has been good, but more that just time investment. I don't feel like I was nearly on top of my matchups and understanding of the game. However, in a mental health, mental endurance thing, just cruising along all weekend. So it's amazing what eating well, getting enough sleep does for your performance. So in some ways, actually, it's detracted due to my understanding of the game, but it's enhanced that I was just, you know, it was 11 o'clock on Sunday night, had a coffee, was feeling good, just cruising along. So mental clarity is a thing, and that was very helpful.
His next question is, how was picking the game back up? Was it a struggle, or was it like getting back on the bike?
Bit of both. So I remember when I was starting to learn the game, I thought of it in sort of three phases. Number one, understanding, you know, the basic mechanics of the game. Number two, understanding how your army works and its strategies. Number three, understanding how opponents' armies work and their strategies. Because if you can understand that third one, you can look at more options than your opponent can possibly deliver. So number one, understanding how the game works, fine. A couple of little changes, that was not a problem. Number two, understanding my lists and their strategies and how they work. That was probably my advantage in that I was a little bit dark horsing and getting back on Kruger felt like riding a bike. But... Having said that, for example, I played one turn and 45 minutes to do a very convoluted caster kill with Kruger on the bottom of one. That there were elements of that that were like riding a bike because I knew what his spell list, what my sort of options were. But then I hadn't actually played too many Wolds in Kruger as much before, so I had to really think, well, Trample and Gallows has an 18-inch threat, and if I TK my own model, it's 20, and if I can TK his, it's 22, and that was just like one of the really basic vectors in that game. So there was a lot of thought that went into that one. Number three, understanding my opponent's lists. Oh my god, trying to digest a list that you've never seen before, what its key parts were, and how that's going to translate to the field that was a challenge. So, for example, in round two, I played against Nick Owen. I just apologize in advance. I'm going to butcher so many people's names. From Melbourne, and he had Rahiro with two blockaders. The two blockaders have a 14-inch melee threat in that list with escort. And I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure it's 14. I just need to ask. And then my Raptors on feet turn go 14. So we've both got two Colossals. It's kind of like a mirror match. There are elements to this where I'm like, well, whoever gets first turn is going to be critical. So a lot of like the basic game principles you kind of have to apply rather than, oh, I know that mathematically a blockader at range will do XYZ damage, but it's D3, so it's variable. You kind of have to just, if you don't have number three, understanding your opponent's list and strategy down pat, you just kind of have to resort to basic principles and number two, knowing your own list and your own strengths. So War Machine exists in that space where it's kind of not like, and I'll just say it, it's not like Age of Sigmar or 40K where you can kind of just know what your list does and roll dice at your opponent. You get rewarded for understanding of your opponent. And so That was a roller coaster all weekend, trying to navigate that balancing number two with number three.
Did you have any tips or suggestions on how people can, I guess, kind of deal with it when they have, when they're coming up against a list that they don't really know a ton about?
Yeah, for sure. Number one is go through steps one and two first. Obviously, understand the basic game mechanics and everything that your list is capable of, and your own strategies and synergies that you've put into your list. But then after that, just ask your opponents. You can't say, what does your list do? But you can say, so the Blockader normally threats 12 and it's 14 with Rahira, right? And you've got some range threat. What other guns, what other significant guns do you have? Or just really, basic framing questions that can help you understand the basic synergies of a list. People are lovely. They'll help you as well. But, also just set the tone. Like, I kind of had to say, look, it was weird going into a lot of games. Once I was good, but I'm probably not good now, but maybe I am. I don't know. Please be gentle. I know this is a big con and big tournament. Just relax and be gentle. And title of my sex tape. And people are lovely. They'll be helpful. So just ask the right questions, I guess. Another one is also just look at what matchups your opponents have played. So for example, I played going into round four. I played against Crucible Guard, and he had. Now, I think this was Mick from New Zealand. He had played Sylvester all day, and then he dropped McKay against me. And I thought, I was looking at it, and I could see he was a bit intimidated by my list. So sort of just like reading the EQ of the other person and how they react when they see your lists. And even when you reveal your caster, like, oh, shit, I wasn't expecting that or something. You can kind of tell if you're going to get a psychological edge on them or not. And not that you should be manipulative and take advantage of that. In a manipulative way, but understanding that, like, oh, maybe this guy hasn't played this caster, or maybe this is a new matchup to not as familiar with, you might have an edge there. What do you think, Mr. J?
I think that you gave some of the best points. This is pretty basic, but just in general, it's a good idea to do a quick review of your opponent's Warcaster or Warlock card in War Room before starting the game.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot of times where you'll read through it and be like, oh yeah, I forgot they had that, or yeah. Et cetera.
And if you're going to look at one card, just look at the caster, for sure.
Right.
And maybe like, for example, in the double Blockader list, considering that's about 2/3 of the list, the Blockader card, right. Or the Blockador card. Definitely reviewing the card. And another really basic one is... what are your theme benefits? So, for example, in I think it's Wolves of Winter, the one unit gets Apparition every turn. Not Wolves of Winter. The Doom Reaver theme list. One unit gets Apparition every turn, so they are threatening 11 base, but one unit will always be able to threaten 13. Or any unit will always be able to threaten 13. So just understanding some of the really foundational things.
All right, so I've got one more question, and then the rest will all be questions for me.
Jay, I have one question for you before that.
Okay.
Why does a Waldweird not have Eyeless Sight? I'm just looking at its card in War Room.
I don't know the answer to that, James.
it's like a bundle of sticks with some glowing orbs and a few nicely detailed rocks with beautiful calligraphy. It doesn't have eyeball. It doesn't even look like it's alive other than it's glowing. Where is its eyes?
That's what the little orb in the center is its eye. I mean, by that logic, all of the constructs should have Eyeless Sight.
Meanwhile, just have like,
yes, obviously, you're correct.
Look, I'm relying on your deep and intimate understanding of the fluff to answer this.
Yes.
What you're well known for. Sorry, go on.
Okay. He says, have you noticed any differences or changes in the game and in the community now as compared to before?
Don't take this one the wrong way, but I was chatting with a close friend, Sean Benson, over the weekend, who was also at the con just like perusing, and he's painting some models for me at the moment. He was dabbling in War Machine, but I don't think he found any traction because there weren't people in his meta playing, and he's dabbling in Age of Sigmar. And he came over to me and he said, you know, one thing I've definitely noticed War Machine players look like they're not having fun. And that was a big generalization, but I do know what he means. Like, a lot of us are very concentrated, determined to, like, really get some good value from our games. And I think maybe one of the things we can do is just have a just self-reflect every now and then and say, am I having fun? Is this fun? Because it is fun. It's really fun. But I think we can easily get wrapped up in a big con. Whereas the Age of Sigmar guys, they were laughing and having beers and having a great time. And yeah, it is a bit more of a beer and pretzels game. But the vibe over there was super fun, where the vibe for us was just fun, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But the War Machine guys, everyone was very close, very approachable. Seemed like everyone was having fun. There were just tense moments on the table. Nothing sinister or sad or manipulative or sad or whatever. But tense, like you're playing a really intense computer game and you can't look away for a second.
So I have several chain attack shirts that I wear to conventions. One of them is like Fluff Bunny. Another one says, I'm smiling on the inside.
Yep, I know that one. Yep.
So I do have kind of resting grumpy face all the time, but probably even more so when I play War Machine.
Yeah. Let's just call it concentration face because it is very mentally taxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else did I notice? People are lovely and welcoming, and a lot of people lent each other models and would just step up to be in a team at the last second or help other people out. The community is absolutely lovely. So that was nice.
All right. Well, now you are going to have questions for me.
Awesome.
All right. So where I wanted to start actually was a little bit about what's going on in Australia right now. And, you know, I'm really good friends with lots of people in Australia. And one of the things that Aaron Wells said was that he had to, because of the fires in Canberra, he had to fly into Sydney and then take a bus ride up to Canberra. And, you know, there's, I think that most of us have probably seen some of the images of stuff going on there, but you tweeted out one last night that was a fire that's going on right now near Canberra. But I guess, can you maybe talk a little bit about what being there and living through this, what this kind of experience has been like for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up as well. Very unrelated to War Machine, but very important and to all of us, because at the end of the day, we are burning down our only house. In 2003, there was a big bushfire that came through Canberra, where I live. It was three fires to the west that combined into one big mega fire. I think it was 480 or so homes were destroyed, and I only live in a town of 400,000. A lot of national wildlife was destroyed. I unfortunately was away at the time, and my dogs were in the kennels in that area. The kennels and my dogs were killed. And I don't think people understand how bad bushfires are in Australia. So I remember coming back to the kennels that day. We drove back from the coast when we found out how quickly it happened. And oh my God, if you want to see how fast these bushfires move, some of them move 70, 80, 90 kilometers an hour. So that's
like
50, 60 miles an hour. So it is fast. I remember as a, 13, 14 year old back then, turning around the corner into a street near where the fires were and looking up and this, you know, 10 story tall, fire, like 30 meters, 40 meters. And they're up to 70, 80, 90 meters tall. And just going like, oh my God, it's the apocalypse. The sky is black at 1 PM. So fast forward now to 2020, and it's on a whole nother scale. 1 billion, animals have been destroyed. Koalas might be considered extinct. Endangered.
Endangered.
In New South Wales, which is one of our main states, the state where Sydney is. we've lost something like 30 lives, multiple firefighting lives. Thousands of homes have been destroyed. To give some scale, this is over 20 times larger than the Californian fires of a couple of years ago, and they are the biggest bushfires in the history of the world, of the modern world that have been recorded. In conjunction with that, we have the hottest ever, we had the hottest ever day in Canberra, 46 degrees, so I think that's about 115 or so Fahrenheit, in Australia, in Canberra. We're getting commonly over 50 degrees in Sydney. And so you look at these images, the one I tweeted out, it's horrifically similar to the 2003 picture I sent out. Out there, there are multiple koala sanctuaries that I like to go and like take friends to when they visit stuff that are being destroyed. I don't know what really more there is to say other than our firefighting service is volunteer based and it's state run. And the amount of fundraising that has come into and recognition has been tremendous. But New Year's Day, I could not see. The smoke was so bad, and I'm not even in the middle of the fires. I could not see 20 meters in front of me. The building, the house next door to me, I couldn't see it when I go out the front of my house. It's like the apocalypse. If we keep this up, we're not going to have a planet to live on. it's kind of that simple. So there's parts of it about how do we better react to climate change? What does farming look like in the year 2050? What does agriculture look like in the year 2060? But the thing that really got to me was that I'm seeing, I don't mean to pick on Americans, but I was seeing tweets about the Super Bowl and teams getting through and the importance of whatever. And then I'm seeing like literally burnt koalas that are dying. And the Australian wildlife that has just been absolutely destroyed. People have lost their homes. People have lost everything. And basically, just get some perspective sometimes. I think I was paralyzed for about 2 days just reading reports and of what's going on with the bushfires and how can we help. So if it's something that really bothers you, which it probably should be, then the best thing you can do is donate. Donate to the Rural Fire Service, predominantly of New South Wales or Victoria, because that's where they mainly are at the moment, but any of the Australian fire services, WIRES, the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, all of them are great foundations who can really use your money. Secondly, if you want to get more involved, there are things that you can do. I'm potentially heading down to Adelaide next week to look at after koalas in a makeshift koala sanctuary, which could be really meaningful. So in a weird sadistic sort of way, I do actually like some of the humanitarian movements and unification we see of communities in crises. It does give me a little bit of faith in humanity that you don't see on the regular sort of day to day. But it shouldn't come to this to see that. The other one that blows my mind is that there's a small town called Braidwood near where I live. There has been a fire. They've only just put it out, and even then it's still, like, going. They think it might have reignited overnight. 2 months. It has been going for 2 months. You think about fires, you're like, just put it out. No, the Australian landscape is so vast and so green and dense and – oh, sorry, not green. So many trees, but it's really dry and yellow at the moment that everything right. just goes up so quickly. So I cannot emphasize the scale of these fires and the global impact that they will have. Other than something like we had the worst air quality. We have an AQI rating of like over 5,000 one day. And to give you an idea, the quality of air in New Delhi is 300. So it was 15 times as bad as a day in New Delhi, the most polluted city in the world. Anyway, sorry, bit of a rant, but basically, like, it fucking sucks. If please donate, please get involved. You can do stuff from the other side of the world as well.
So, I guess a few things on this before we move on. The first one is, I think that what you said is, you touched on something important. I think it's easy for us to look at what's going on and to feel hopeless or to feel depressed or to feel like, you know, we're... what can I even do about this? And I guess I'm sure you've had to deal with this even more so, having it in your face all the time. But what sort of recommendations do you have for people who, and obviously the reason why we brought this up wasn't to be a downer to everyone, but hopefully there are things that we can do. So I guess, how do you try to have a good frame of mind about it?
Yeah. Well put, Jay. The first thing I would say is don't give yourself too much anxiety. Don't read about it 24/7. Don't think about it 24/7 because it's not healthy for your frame of mind. Secondly, try not to give yourself cabin fever. But just look into the Rural Fire Service and the great things that they're doing as well. They really are outstanding people, and you can go and volunteer if you really want. Otherwise, look into – the other one is Celeste Barber on Facebook. She raised over $50 million, which is Facebook's biggest ever crowdsourcing fundraiser. They're putting on great concerts. They're doing really good, positive things to help give back to the community. The other one is, yeah, like just limit how much you want to read about it, because it can be a very depressive spiral. It's not all bad. There are lots of good things that are coming out of this, but just I think it's just educate yourself and inform yourself so that you you understand the importance of an event like this.
This is so somewhat kind of related to this. I watched a documentary one time about it was Warren Buffett who was the documentary was about, and part of it he was going and talking to a group of high school students, and he gave them kind of a comparison or analogy, and he said, you know, what would you do if, you know, I gave you this really expensive sports car, let's say a Ferrari, and it was going to be free, but the condition was that you were never going to have any other car in your life besides this car. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, that's actually would be pretty interesting, right? And but the natural response you have to that is like, okay, well, I'm going to take really good fucking care of this car. And he was doing this analogy in comparison to the bodies that we have and what kind of an amazing gift they are, and that we don't necessarily treat them as well as we should sometimes. But I think it also has a lot of comparisons to this planet that we're on. And, you know, it can definitely be frustrating when you are dealing with a lot of these decisions are made through political processes, and it feels like the common citizen can't impact that as much as we would like to.
Yeah, but it's very easy to complain and throw stones rather than actually do something. But there are things that you can do. There are so many. One of the things I loved was the first Monday. We sort of have 2 weeks ish shutdown where everyone stops working over Christmas, and this is when the bushfires were at their peak, I would say. The Monday morning after that, I was driving to work, and there were like hundreds of people standing outside Parliament House in my city with signs saying honk for the environment, climate change now, all these things. There've been rallies recently to like get the government to be more proactive and do things and inquiries and support and yada yada. But it does go back to power to the people. You can make a difference.
Yeah.
It sounds really, really corny saying that, but there are groups that you can join if you really, really want to get up in arms about it. The Warren Buffett analogy is really interesting. Like, I absolutely think we take way too much advantage of our situation and are not thankful enough for our look, anyone listening to this podcast is already in like the top 10% of society. You have a roof over your head. You probably have money. You can probably pay rent. You can eat. You probably have friends. Like, you're already in that elite group of society, if you want to put it that way. Be thankful, hey. Like, here's one. If you were given $86,000 a day, is it 86? Just 2 seconds. Let me get that number right. This is thrilling radio using a calculator, James. Very good. If you were given $86,400 a day, every day for your whole life and somebody took $20 out of your account one day, would you be angry? How would you feel?
I think I'd be okay.
You'd be all right?
Yeah.
So 86,400 is the amount of seconds in every single day. If somebody made you upset for 20 seconds or angry or whatever, why bother, other than self-improvement and reflection, why dwell on it for more than 20 seconds? Why let it ruin your day for more than 20 seconds? You still got 86,380 of them left. I'm pretty sure you can have an absolutely outstanding life with that amount.
I think that that's true.
Sorry, Jay. I interrupted you.
No, you're good. The last thing I was going to say on this will be really short, but one of the Chain Attack is going to have Aaron Well on shortly, and we're going to talk a little bit about this topic as well, but one of the things that we're going to talk about is that as a whole, I feel like the War Machine community is something that's very generous.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that I'm going to be doing it at Gameopolis, and Chain Attack is going to be trying to encourage other gaming communities to do, is to have some charity tournaments for Australia.
Oh, thank you.
Australia
means a shitload.
There's been, you know, a lot of Australia's been a really important part of the War Machine community, and so I think it would be great if we were, you know, there's been a long tradition of some really fun charity events that War Machine has done, stuff like Food Machine or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that it would behoove us to do something like that for Australia right now.
Thanks, mate. That really, really means a lot. Thank you. That's exactly a way that you guys can help. Another example is Trent got together some of the Oz painting community, and then a bunch of the Europeans jumped in, and they basically auctioned/raffled off a bunch of their busts and things that they've been painting recently. Trent was like, "Oh yeah, if we can make, you know, a couple of $100, that'd be good." They raised $5,000.
That's awesome.
And a bunch of people got models that they liked, or, you know, classes with professional painters and stuff. There are so many things that we can do for each other. So thank you, Jay. That's awesome. That's really kind of you guys.
All right. Well, to close things out, I did get one question on Twitter that we can go over.
Awesome.
So this is from one Dr. Simon Hall.
Oh, God.
A.K.A. Nips. he says, viewer question, when you come back from not playing a game for a few years and win the biggest tournament in your country with mere months of practice, are you good or is your country bad?
And a picture of John Nash looking at the Matrix. Let me answer your question with a question. Which country has won the WTC more than once? Which only country has won the WTC more than once?
I'm going to have to go with Australia.
Boom. Mic drop.
Mic drop.
Exactly. And maybe we can make it a third this year.
Maybe we can. I'm going to... So, as a preview of stuff we'll talk about next time, I actually want to talk some about your WTC team. I want to talk about your list that you played this time at CanCon. A little bit about Tharn and why you opted to not play them. And things of that nature.
Sure. I'm excited. So, I've got some answers already.
Awesome. So, as always, you can get your awesome gaming fix from Discount Games Inc. We'll send you out your gaming product. And you can email me at j@discountgamesinc.com for prices that are too good to be advertised. And check out Muse on Minis. We have some great stuff that we're putting out. One of the things that we just got approved was our new Kador Zones. And so Nigel's back to getting those ready. And he's going to be pushing to get basically all of the... all the zones finished for all the factions. So we're pretty close, and I'm looking forward to seeing those done.
I'm just having a look at them now. They look mad. The Infernal bases are great too. Really cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, James, for doing this with me. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. And sorry for the adjacent rants, but important stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll be talking to you here shortly. And so thank you, everyone, for listening, and especially thank you, To the people who are backing us on Patreon, you guys are awesome.
You guys are the best.